When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild. Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Today we're travelling all the way back to the 1950s for what is possibly one of the most baffling disappearances I have ever researched. A case that has so many theories surrounding it, but so little evidence. Actually no, pretty much zero evidence. This one is a true unsolved mystery. Ronald Henry Tamman Jr. was born on July 23rd, 1933 in Maple Heights, Ohio, where he was the second oldest of five children. Now, seeing as this is such an old case, there's not loads of information out there about Ron's life before the disappearance, but from everything I could find, he was very much this all-American teenage boy, like the kind of man that parents at the time hoped their daughters would end up with. The college he chose to attend was Miami University, and no, not Miami in Florida. This is Miami University, located in Oxford, Ohio, only about 250 miles southwest of where he'd grown up in Maple Heights in Cleveland. And his first year of college went without a hitch. It actually went really well for him. He fitted into the lifestyle really, really well. Ron was considered to be very good looking, he was a college wrestler, he was part of a fraternity, Delta Tau Delta, he was a string bass player in the college jazz band, the Campus Owls, and he was the residence hall counsellor. Like, he had a lot going for him, he was very much the kind of all-American guy that you see in old Hollywood movies. He was the jock, the musician, the fraternity brother. He was popular and responsible, musical and sporty, and he certainly wasn't the type to make loads of enemies. People who knew Ron in life described him as jovial, kind-hearted, funny, and he didn't exactly have loads of friends. He kind of just kept himself to himself. He just kept himself away from any drama. He wasn't interested. He just wanted to get through life. And Ron did have goals to be pretty successful in life. He was quite ambitious. From when he was a literal child, he always had a job on the go, whether that was delivering newspapers or caddying at the local golf club. Like, money was always this really big motivator for Ron, probably due to him not coming from money himself. He always saw it as this big sign of success. And he had his entire life mapped out. He was going to go to college, get a degree, and get a good, well-paying, steady job when he left. Apparently his goal was to become a bond salesman, which doesn't sound particularly sexy or glamorous, but it was sure and steady, which I think might sum Ron up perfectly. people who knew him at the time he went missing never really had much to say about him. Like, there was no big crazy stories of their time together because all he did in college was study or play in the band. This wasn't a spontaneous, wild guy who would do things like go off on adventures in the middle of the night. He was planned, meticulous, and he had ambitions for his life that involved finishing college with a good grade. And he was on the dean's list. He was on his way there. But finishing college are the key words there. Like, he had no plans to disappear. Like, he was going to finish college. The months leading up to Ron's disappearance were fairly unexciting. Like, nothing happened that could explain his sudden disappearance. But one thing that has been brought up time and time again is the fact that 5 months to the day before Ron vanished, he went and got his blood typed, which was something that was quite rare to do at the time, and nobody's ever really been able to explain, like, why he did this. On Wednesday, the 19th of November 1952, Ron went to visit a Dr. Boone, a family physician in Hamilton, Ohio, who also just so happened to be the county coroner. Ron turned up at Dr. Boone's office that day and requested a blood test to find out what blood type he had, which you would think would be a fairly normal thing, but apparently it was a very strange request for this time. So much so that Dr. Boone said that Ron has been the only person to ever come to him with such a request, at least with no clear reason for doing so. Apparently, when he asked Ron why he wanted his blood typed, he said something along the lines of, "I might have to give blood someday." But this is something that Ron could have done on campus for free. Like, by going to Dr. Boone, he was going to have to pay out of pocket. So why would a college student choose to pay money for something they could otherwise do for free on campus? Ron and his family weren't particularly well off, and although I couldn't find an exact amount that this blood typing cost, I know it wouldn't have been cheap. But, like, why wouldn't he just go to the campus doctor and get it done there and not pay any money? It was odd enough that after Dr. Boone then read about Ron's disappearance in the papers, he tried to raise it with the relevant university authorities. But no one really cared and he was just brushed off. It was only 20 years after the fact that people started to pay attention to this part of the story when Dr. Boone spoke to a reporter for the Hamilton Journal News. Now, there are two main reasons why somebody would want to know their blood type in this time in the 1950s. Number one is obviously they wanted to give blood, or number two, they needed a paternity test. But Dr. Boone said that he didn't believe that Ron was going to give blood because of the way he worded his answer when he was asked. He said, "I might have to give blood someday," rather than just a simple, like, "Oh yeah, I want to go give blood." Like, might have to? Why would anyone might have to give blood? It very much seemed to Dr. Boone like this was a brush-off answer, and it was certainly strange enough that he was still trying to draw attention to it 20 years later. We will be coming back around to this later in the theories portion of the episode, so remember all this. And for what it's worth, Ron's blood type was O positive. They don't have any DNA on file for him today, but at least they do have that information. They know he was O positive thanks to this blood test. The day that Ron disappeared, the 19th of April 1953, seemed to begin like any other. I mean, it was a Sunday, and I'm not entirely sure what Ron's usual Sunday activities would have been, but he was Ron. He probably went to band practice, and then would have spent a good chunk of his day studying, like, there's no doubt about that. But we definitely know he would have spent some time outside of his dorm room that day because he gets back in the evening and finds a fish in his bed.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
A fish in his bed. It doesn't seem like nowadays anybody thinks this fish in particular was anything sinister. It's kind of just assumed it was somebody in the dorms, or maybe a fraternity brother, maybe playing a silly prank on him. Or maybe it was something a little bit more sinister, because like I said, Ron was an RA. So maybe he pissed somebody off in the dorms and they wanted to get back at him. In case you're not entirely clear, an RA is a resident assistant whose job it is to kind of keep everything ticking along in the dorms. So some of Ron's responsibilities would have included organising social gatherings, ensuring a sense of community, resolving conflicts, ensuring that maintenance are keeping up with their jobs. But also, enforcing the rules would have been a huge part of this role. And that would inevitably rub some people up the wrong way. Like, some people would be pissed at him sometimes. Could one of those people have put a fish in his bed? As far as I was able to find, nobody ever came forward admitting that it was them. But after Ron disappeared, I can imagine what originally began as a very simple prank would now be seen under a much darker lens. So people probably didn't want to be under the microscope for this disappearance, but I'm pretty certain it was just somebody playing a prank. But of course, with a fish in his bed, Ron now needed new sheets. He went to find the residence hall manager to get some new sheets at sort of some point between 8 and 8:30 p.m. and then he returned back to his room. Some sources say that apparently he did mention he was going straight to bed, but as we'll come to see, some other sources report him going out and socialising after this point, so who really knows? Old cases like this one have so many storylines attached to them over the years that it becomes very hard to kind of filter out the truth. But the facts here are this. When Ron's roommate, Charles Finley, returned to their room at around 11:30 p.m. after having been gone since Friday, there was no sign of Ron. He said that the door was already open when he got there, but with Ron being an RA, that was quite normal. Like, he wanted people to feel like they could come and talk to him whenever, so he had very much an open door policy. Charles said the radio was still on, the lights were on, and the bed had been made with fresh sheets, but it wasn't kind of as if they'd been slept in yet. Charles also reported that Ron's textbook was still open on the desk as if he was mid-studying, but even that was strange. This was a psychology textbook, and Ron had actually dropped his psychology course just a few weeks earlier. This has led to some speculation that maybe somebody else set up this scene to make it look like nothing suspicious had happened, or maybe Ron was just referencing this textbook for something else. All of Ron's belongings were still in the room, his wallet and his car keys most notably. His car was still parked in the car park outside and it was locked with his string base inside. In fact, it seems the only things that Ron took with him when he vanished were the clothes on his back and maybe a tiny bit of cash, like $10, $15, not much at all. And although this was April, the 19th of April to be exact, it was unusually cold this night and there was a layer of snow on the ground. Ron had only taken with him a very thin plaid jacket. But at the time, at 10:30 at night, Charles didn't think anything about the situation. It's not like he assessed Ron's wardrobe to see exactly what was missing. As far as he was concerned, Ron had maybe popped out somewhere, maybe he was socialising with another student in the dorms, or maybe he was dealing with an issue as RA. Like, Charles wasn't worried about anything, he just went to bed expecting to wake up in the morning and see Ron in his bed. But he didn't. The next morning, Ron was still nowhere to be seen. And as the day went on, Charles got more and more concerned and eventually reported him as missing to the university authorities, who of course did nothing. So Ron went missing on the Sunday. On the Monday, he's reported as missing by his roommate. And by the Tuesday, the news did reach the dean, Carl Knox, who told Charles that this was a very normal thing for students to do. It was very normal for them to take time off when they're stressed. That maybe Ron had just gone on some sort of trip and wasn't telling anyone, that he was hiding away for a bit. He'll definitely be back, is what the dean said. But by the Thursday, there was still no sign of him, so the university and local police finally started taking this seriously. Ron was missing for 4 days before anyone started seriously looking for him. And as they always say, the first 48 hours are the most important. They were long gone. When the search finally started, it was a big one. A 3-mile radius of Fisher Hall was searched by hundreds of people, students, the police, the Air Force, ROTC, and literally nothing was found. Like, nothing. Not a single clue as to where Ron might have gone. He really did just vanish into thin air. Now, luckily, the authorities did have Ron's fingerprints on file. Something happened when he was a kid, which meant they had them. But they would never end up being of much help because they didn't find him. They didn't find a body. They found nothing. The FBI did eventually participate in the search too after Ron's mother contacted them and they opened a missing persons case. But they did say that because there were no signs of foul play, it couldn't really fall under their jurisdiction, like their criteria to actually investigate. But despite saying this, they actually did still do quite a lot. The FBI questioned friends and family, they attended the faculty meetings, they did help, but they didn't really have any more luck than anyone else.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
The next year, the FBI actually looked into his case again when he was drafted and obviously it didn't show up. They tried to do him for a selective service violation, but they did close the case after a couple of years for very obvious reasons. Ron was gone. He disappeared, nowhere to be seen. There have been so many theories speculated over the years, as you can probably imagine. One of the main ones has been that Ron decided to go off and start a new life, but this one was debunked pretty quickly. Ron's bank account has never been touched since that day, suggesting that he didn't just decide to leave college and start anew. There weren't any large withdrawals made from the account in the months before his disappearance either, so it's not like he was taking money out and stockpiling it. It just didn't seem like he'd chosen to leave. Ron's family did say at the time that it would have been wildly unlikely for him to just up and leave without telling them. It just wasn't really in his nature. Ron's sister, Marcia, has said in the years since that everyone was devastated when they heard the news, that their mother was just heartbroken and Ron wouldn't have chosen to do that to her. For years, the authorities discounted any chances that Ron had chosen to leave his life, but they did eventually consider it. They considered that it might have been deliberate because it really is one of the only viable explanations here. But there's no actual evidence pointing in that direction, like most people don't think that he chose to leave his life. There are theories that he is still alive, but the theory that he chose to leave and is still alive, no, it's been discounted. Authorities also discounted any notion of foul play, seeing as there was no sign of a struggle in his bedroom, and he was also a college wrestler. Like, you'd have to be a very strong, a very large person to try and take Ron down. He was 5'10" and 175 pounds, so not the biggest guy ever, but like, he also knew how to fight, he knew how to subdue people, and plus, it's very rare for men to be abducted like this. Like, men are much less likely to be victims of a sexually motivated crime than women. Random abductions of men are so much rarer. Not impossible, but rare. So in those early days, the only viable theory the police had left to play with was that of amnesia. By Friday, April 24th, just 5 days after his disappearance, it was written in the local Hamilton Journal News that officials believe that he might have suffered an attack of amnesia. And by officials here, it does seem they meant the university officials. Like, the university would have had their own police investigating this case, and it seems like they took over rather than the actual local authorities, if that makes sense. Weeks passed here with nothing. There were no sightings, no clues as to where Ron had potentially disappeared off to. But then in June 1953, a local woman called Mrs. Spivey came forward with a very odd story. She lived in nearby Seven Mile and said that on the night of Ron's disappearance, a man had shown up on her doorstep. It was around midnight or maybe the early hours of the 20th. She said this man seemed very confused and couldn't even remember his own name. He asked for directions to the nearest bus stop, to which Mrs. Spivey replied that there wasn't a bus stop in Seven Mile, that he'd have to go to Hamilton. And then the man just walked away. She expected to hear a car door slam after she sort of shut her front door, but when she didn't, she realised that this man was walking. And she kind of lived in, like, not necessarily in the middle of nowhere, but it wasn't really an area where people generally walk to. She said that this man had a smudge of dirt on his cheek and a vacant look in his eyes. She also noticed that even though it was unseasonably cold for April and there was literally snow on the ground, this man wasn't wearing a coat or a hat. Mrs. Bivy said that at first she did think he was driving, but then realised that he was walking, and that made her even more concerned for his state of dress. But she didn't report it at the time and didn't really think that much of it until she saw Ron's photo in the newspaper a few weeks later and believed it bore a very strong resemblance to this guy that turned up on her doorstep. The university and the police took this and ran with it. They believed that it supported their theory that Ron had amnesia and had walked away, not knowing who he was anymore. I'd like to think on the back of this there was another renewed search with the possibility that he could be out there somewhere around 7 Mile perhaps, but my research doesn't really suggest that that actually happened. I mean, he disappeared in April, it's now June, chances are that he wouldn't still be alive, and if he was, surely somebody would have reported a man walking around being lost and confused, like how was he feeding, clothing, cleaning himself? No, by June they'd probably assume that he was gone. But if this was Ron on that night, how did he make it to 7 Mile in the first place? It was 10 miles from the university, which isn't that far if you're in a car, but if you're walking on foot, in the cold weather, in the snow, that's a long way to go. It was later found that the local bus lines were suspended that night, so even if this young man, maybe Ron, maybe not, did want to take the bus and he did make it all the way to Hamilton, which is a further 6 miles away from 7 Mile, 6 miles from 7 Mile, no buses would have ever come. Then there was another potential sighting of him in August of that same year in Wellsville, New York. A housing official who knew Ron was on vacation, and he was sure that he saw him in a hotel restaurant with a group of young men. He said Ron, or the Ron lookalike, looked right through him, and after leaving, his wife convinced him to turn back to go and check, but by the time they got back, this person was long gone. Now, this guy told the dean, Carl Knox, the very next day, but it didn't seem that the dean took it any further, and the public certainly wouldn't know about this for over 2 decades. So there was no chance of anyone else in or around Wellsville being able to confirm or deny the identity of who this guy actually was. But after that, the case went cold pretty quickly. I mean, it was always a cold case. In June 1953, so a couple of months after Ron went missing, an unidentified body was found in a ravine outside Lafayette in Georgia, which is a good few hundred miles away.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
At first, there wasn't really much thought about this, like certainly no connections were made to Ron due to the distance, but decades later, a cold case detective made the potential connection and they got Ron's sister Marcia to provide a DNA sample for comparison. In February 2008, they exhumed the unidentified body, but ultimately found that the DNA wasn't a match. It definitely wasn't Ron. It wasn't all for nothing though, because this unidentified man's DNA is now entered into the databases, and so is Ron's, or at least Ron's familial DNA. His sister's DNA is now in the databases, and hopefully that would be close enough to strike a match if Ron's body is ever found. And also, this renewed attention in 2008 brought a lot of fresh eyes to this case. Lots of people read about it that never heard about Ron before. But of course, 2008, it's now 2024, this case still remains unsolved. In 1978, so 25 years after the disappearance, Fisher Hall, the halls that he lived in, was demolished, and in the process, the ruins were searched thoroughly for any sign of Ron, in case there was maybe some sort of freak accident and he was hidden away in a crack for all these years. That does happen. But they didn't find anything. He definitely 100% wasn't in the halls when he died. Or maybe he was in the halls when he died, but that's not where his remains remained. So we've talked about the theories the investigators focused on at the time, which was mostly the amnesia theory, which all of these years later, in my personal opinion, just doesn't really hold up. Let's say that Ron did indeed have a fall and hit his head, he had post-traumatic memory loss. It just doesn't really happen the same way you see in the movies. You don't forget everything from your past and only remember life going forward. Like, most of the time, the memory loss involves sort of just general forgetfulness. You forget where you've left things, you forget plans, you forget routes or things that you read. You forget things, but you don't forget everything. Of course, there is the occasional very, very rare case where it is a total amnesia, but that is just so crazy rare, and the chances of Ron suffering with this, with wandering off and then never being found dead or alive, is just so wildly slim. Not impossible, but it's just, there's no chance. Like, it's so, so slim. There's also the possibility, as we've covered, that Ron chose to walk away from his life, but there was no motivation, no reason for him to do this. And with cases like this, you've kind of just got to trust family and friends when they say it just wasn't within their nature. There's not anything pointing towards the idea that Ron chose to walk away from his life. There's nothing to suggest that this is what he did. So can we say it's a legitimate theory? Because there's no evidence, but there's no evidence for anything in this case at all. But in my eyes, and the eyes of so many others, there is just one theory that makes so much sense in this case. A theory that it doesn't even seem like the authorities ever really investigated. And that's the theory that Ron fell victim to some sort of fraternity prank or hazing. And it all comes back round to the fish found in his bed. It's always been accepted that the fish was some sort of prank from a Halls resident or fraternity brother, but what if that was just the beginning of their plans for Ron on that night? Although unconfirmed, there are some sources that do suggest that around 8:30 p.m. after he'd returned with his fresh sheets, he was disturbed in his room when he heard a loud noise, and being an RA, it was Ron's duty to go and investigate. Perhaps in doing so, he found himself abducted by his friends, involved in some sort of ritual hazing. That could explain why there was no sort of sign of a struggle in his room. A common hazing or prank of this time was to abduct a fraternity brother and blindfold them, driving a few miles away and dropping them on the side of the road. And then they've got to make their own way home. And if you think about it, this happening to Ron would have made a lot of sense. His friends put a fish in his bed to mess with him and then lure him outside with some sort of unusual loud noises, right as he's in the middle of doing some studying. He then gets a bag thrown over his head, he's bundled into a car and driven away, perhaps dropped somewhere near or in 7 Mile. And then he's meant to find his own way back home. These were teenagers. This was a stupid prank thought up before their frontal cortex was fully developed. They likely wouldn't have thought it all the way through. This was just something that frat brothers have done for years before and for years after. But maybe that night, something went wrong. You may recall me mentioning earlier how it was unseasonably cold that night. It was the 19th of April, but this was Ohio, like weather can be really hit or miss there apparently. And it was cold that night, snow was literally on the ground, and Ron was only wearing a very thin jacket. And it was probably the kind of cold where you just don't realise how cold it is until you've been out in it for a while, like the cold gets right down to your bones. Apparently in the weeks before this, it had been sort of getting gradually warmer, and this was a very sudden cold snap, so the body wouldn't have been acclimatised to it properly. So, let's ponder this. Ron is abducted by frat brothers, he's dropped in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the night, it is literally freezing cold weather, and now he has to make his own way home. He wanders for it in the dark, maybe he trips and gets a bit of dirt on his face, he gets a bit wet and muddy, and then he comes across a house, deciding to go and ask for directions to the nearest bus stop.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
He wants to get back to the university, and the quickest way to do it is going to be via bus. He speaks to the woman who answers the door, but probably doesn't want to bother her with the details. He doesn't want to ask her if he can go in and warm up and order a taxi, like he doesn't want to bother her. So he just asks for directions and goes on his way. It could well be likely that by this point he was suffering with some sort of hypothermia, of which one of the main symptoms can be confusion. Maybe Ron didn't have amnesia, he was just hypothermic and out of sorts. When speaking to this woman, he couldn't get his brain to think straight, and that's why she said that he was very confused and not really making any sense. After leaving the woman's house, he goes to make his way to the bus stop in Hamilton, but of course, it's a long walk, it's 6 miles away, and he eventually succumbs to the elements. You would assume that if that were the case, then maybe his body would have been found at some point in the year since, but maybe there's a chance that he just went completely off the beaten track, maybe he didn't follow the roads, maybe he just walked into the woods. And also, only a 3 mile radius of Fisher Hall was properly searched, like intensely searched in the investigation. Both 7 mile and Hamilton are outside of that radius. If Ron did go off the beaten track and then his remains were ravaged by animals in the aftermath, perhaps there never was much of a body to find. Or there is, of course, a possibility that his body was disposed of. Maybe when Ron didn't make it back, maybe the pranksters went out to find him and they found worst case scenario. Maybe they then went to great lengths to hide his body and ensure that he was never found, vowing never to speak about what had happened. I know that does maybe sound like somewhat of a movie plot, but when you're trying to think of possible scenarios here, there's no denying this one could potentially be possible. It could be an accident, but then the accident was covered up. I don't know, to me the return dehazing theory just makes so much sense. It could explain pretty much everything about this case. But we're not done talking about theories though, because as I told you earlier in the episode, we're coming back round to the blood. Now personally, I don't really believe that the fact that he went to get his blood typed 5 months before he disappeared has anything to do with his disappearance, but I've been wrong before and I'm going to explore it regardless because it is really interesting. As I mentioned earlier, there are two reasons why somebody would want to get their blood typed. One, to be able to give blood, or at least like back in the day you needed to know your blood type before going in, now they can tell you after the fact, or at least they do in the UK, I assume it's the same in the USA. And two, for a paternity test. It may well be that Ron wanted to go and give blood. There's even some evidence to suggest that maybe he did do just that. But the questionable thing has been, why did he go to an off-campus doctor to get this done when there were on-campus doctors who could have done it for free? That angle has always raised some questions, like why the secrecy surrounding this? So that's where the paternity test comes in. Could it be that Ron had gotten a girl pregnant or he'd been told that he had? This was the 1950s, remember, and one of the only ways in a pre-DNA testing time to prove or disprove paternity was through a blood test. Because you're always going to have the same blood type as one of your biological parents, like a baby is going to have one of their parents' blood type. And this wasn't a foolproof way of testing, of course, like what if both parents have the same blood type, what if other potential fathers have the same blood type. But it was something. So, had all-American boy Ron Tammond got someone pregnant and needed to prove or disprove his paternity? Maybe, but there's never been any evidence to suggest that was true, like nobody's ever come forward, like no woman's ever come forward and been like, yeah, I was sleeping with Ron Tammond, like nobody's ever come forward saying, and you would think they would do that. My research does tell me though that something that was fairly common in these days was for men to get blood typed to help out their friends involved in paternity disputes. Basically, if you got a woman pregnant and she was saying that you were the father and you didn't want the responsibility, like physical, financial or emotional, you'd send all of your little friends to also get their blood typed. Whoever had the same blood type as you would stick up their hand and be like, yeah, I also slept with her, it could be my baby as well. You get 4 or 5 people to do the same, it makes it impossible to tell who the father actually is, and you discredit the woman's reputation in one fell swoop. I mean, why would anyone care what situation a woman who sleeps around finds himself in? It was wildly misogynistic, the man was allowed to get away scot-free, whilst the woman's life is changed forever. Because, of course, abortion was also illegal in this time, it was pre-Roe v. Wade. I say that like Roe v. Wade wasn't poo-pooed. In so many places across the USA, women still find themselves in very similar positions today in 2024. I am so sorry. But yeah, a woman's entire reputation could be completely destroyed. She's now left with a baby and there's no help for her. Like, that is it. She is stuck and the man is allowed to get away with whatever he wants because we live in a patriarchal society. Misogyny. Love it. So, was Ron just trying to support a friend in a paternity denial? Whoever he was supporting, if this was the case, didn't come forward because they just out themselves as being a terrible, terrible person. And at the end of the day, I can't really see how much this would have had to do with his death. I don't really get the impression this was a cold-hearted murder. I do get the impression this disappearance is more of an accident, like something gone wrong. If it was a murder, again, there's zero evidence supporting it. There's no sign of a struggle, no known enemies. I don't know what the blood type like would have had to do with this. He was clearly up to something. I don't think it was to do with his disappearance. There is also quite a deep theory in this case about CIA connections. A woman started looking into this around 2010, and there's all sorts of talk of professors and the CIA and MKUltra. Honestly, it just went too deep for me, like, immediately to make any sort of sense of it, and I personally don't believe there to be anything in this theory. I was going to talk about it, but honestly, I just couldn't make it make any sense. Like, it really quickly just, like, went off the deep end, and it very much erred into conspiracy theory territory rather than just, like,
drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle. With ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Legitimate theories. I don't know. I'm not the person to talk about it. If you're interested in that, I'll leave links down below. What I will say though is that Ron's father always believed that the FBI was involved in this case. Apparently they were always very vague with communications, just a bit shit, a bit shady. And his sister Marcia does say that she does believe that Ron is still out there somewhere, he's alive, but she doesn't believe that he ran away of his own accord. She thinks that maybe he was involved in some sort of cover-up and is maybe under witness protection or had to leave for his own safety or his family's safety. Again, I don't think there's loads to this theory. I think the family are just trying to, like, cling onto something. Perhaps it is easier to believe that he is out there somewhere living under witness protection or had to leave for his own safety than believing it's some sort of accident and he's not there somewhere. Like, I've never been in this situation. I can only imagine the families do what they need to do to live each day, and Marcia believes that he is still out there somewhere and she hopes that one day he might come forward. And you know, I hope he does. I genuinely hope that he does, because I do think that is the best case scenario in this case. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Mysteries and Histories. If you have a bit of time, I would love for you to go and leave a review wherever you're listening to this podcast and spread the word. It would be much appreciated. I'll see you next week.